Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. We'll bring you tactics, triumphs, and truths from the trenches of sales. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, and we're right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. I'm your host, John Rankin. I'm the one bringing you the tactics, triumphs, and truths from the trenches of sales and business. And listen, guys, today in our episode, we have one of the best leaders I've ever met. He's been a good personal friend and student of mine for over 20 years, retired General Scott Brower. He's a veteran that has succeeded in everything that he's done. He has a ton of just great information for us today. So let's gear up, let's march into this conversation, and let's see what we have for us today. Man, thanks so much for joining us, sir.
Hey, John, great. Scott, glad to be here with you. Looking forward to it.
I love having you talk to our Sales Platoon candidates because you have such an interesting career path, you know, going from being in the Army and then going into Special Forces and then going back to the regular Army and then going through the same struggle that many people transitioning go through, even though you set out to say, I'm not going to be one of those numbers. So what I really want to start with is, what drew you to Special Forces to start with?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, I grew up playing sports, right? So I played team sports, you know, all through my childhood, basketball, baseball, and football, and just always enjoyed being part of a team, right? And so, and the Army obviously is a team itself, right? But it's a very, very large organization. And what I found was, I really like being part of tight, small-knit organizations, right? And the Special Forces community is just that, right? They operate in 12-man teams. It's very small. It's very tight-knit. And that was just very attractive to me. So when I was exposed to it and learned a little bit about it, I said, that's something that I'm interested in. And that's eventually what led me to pursue it.
Now, you graduated from West Point. When did you get introduced to, like, the idea of Special Forces? Because I don't think that that happens that much at West Point. When I was up there teaching, I didn't really see that.
Yeah, it doesn't happen a lot, right? But the seed was planted there because you have to take foreign language, you know, as a cadet. And I took German, and my German instructor was a 10th Special Forces Group officer, Tim Heinemann, right? And so that's where I got exposed to it. And the great thing was, while I learned German from him, I learned so much more about our military, right? And that's what really stood out. And just, I'm like, I want to be like that guy, right? We all find those people in our lives, right? I want to be like that man, that woman. But he really just, right, like what everything I saw about him, how he did things, and it was all based on his time in Special Forces, right? So that's where the seed was planted. And then as a lieutenant, I was stationed in Germany. I was an air defense artillery officer as a lieutenant. And then I would just kind of get glimpses, and I would see some Special Forces folks around, and I got a chance to talk to them. And that just really led me, right? And as a platoon leader, right? Small, tight knit, that's right. You know, as an officer, that's as small as it's going to get for you. And I really enjoyed that component of it, right? The Army, that leadership, that teamwork, that camaraderie there. And the Special Forces community afforded me the opportunity then to stay part of that small, tight knit organization. That's what led me to pursue it.
And you started out in 10th group, right? And then
no, I started out in 3rd Special Forces group.
Oh, 3rd. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I knew when I first met you, that would have been what? I think that was pre-9/11, right?
2001. Yeah. In summer 2001. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember you had mentioned that you had come from another group. I thought it was 10th, but I knew that you had got promoted basically and then moved to fifth group, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Unusual. Yeah. Normally, you know, the officers will start in a group and leave and come back and leave and come back kind of thing. But there was a policy of cross-pollinization, right? The commanding general at the time said, I want at least one officer coming out of commanding general staff college, right? That kind of mid-grade education program where you go to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas for 10 months. I want at least one of the officers coming out to go to a different special forces group, because his whole point was, hey, let's learn from each other, right? There's good things happening all over the place. So let's cross-pollinate those good ideas, right? Culture and language are all very important. And that's why most of the folks stay in the same place. But I was the cross-pollinator. I was the one guy that came from a different group and then had to fit and adapt to the culture in that new organization, right? And learn it and become part of them. I couldn't expect them to become how we did things in the old unit, right? I had to adapt to that.
Yeah. So I remember too, because you're one of my favorite stories of all time, you and Sergeant Major Mario Veal getting in a brawl in the middle of the field as we started the combatives program at fifth group. And I tell people about it all the time. Let me tell you about this guy, you know, and then just watching you through your career. And it's so funny too, because you're so humble. Like you would always talk about, you had no clue what was next. And I always looked at you as an outsider going, how's this guy not going to be the next commander? And that was always my experience with you. But I have that combined with, you were also the guy that just brawled.
Well, you know, it goes back to the room and where we met, right? You talk about, you see this in somebody. You go into the combatives room at 5th Special Forces Group, and I don't care how awesome you think you are, there was always somebody that was just a little bit more awesome, right? So there was an opportunity to eat some humble pie on a daily basis in that room. And I think, you know, it was also part of the culture of that organization, right? It's very blue collar. It's let's roll our sleeves up and do the work. The fact that I came from another group and came to fifth group, nobody in that organization cared as long as I was willing to grab my oar and start rowing as hard as everybody else, right? If I was going to put the work in, they were happy to have me. If you weren't going to, right, then that's where the issues came about, right? So they were happy to accept you in there. And so, you know, I think that
very inclusive. Awesome.
Yeah, very inclusive. But a good opportunity to be humble too. Yeah.
You know, it's so funny that you bring that up, because I have a younger guy that I'm working with now. He just retired out of fifth group, and he was a transfer from, I believe it was seventh group. And he transferred because his son developed a pretty serious illness, and there was no medical facility within, I think it was like 3 or 4 hours. So one of their upper leaders was really good friends with Golden, called him up and said, I have this guy, he's a good guy, but we can't medically help his son. And they transferred him up here. And his story about coming into fifth group is so good, because that's the culture that you and I know, which is like, hey, we'll take you, do your job, and it will be as if you've been here the whole time.
Yeah, no, that's very true, right? And what a great community we live in here in Middle Tennessee, where I literally this morning, I was just down at Vanderbilt University Medical Center giving a talk, and there, right, there's world-class medical care for you, right? So we have that for our families there. And one of the messages this morning, right, was take care of your people. And what you just described there was, right, we had a dad trying to take care of his son, right, and get him into the best environment he could be. And then here's the organization that's showing us, hey, we'll help you do that, right? We're going to invest in you, and we're going to make sure your family's taken care of. That's a big part of it, right? And, you know, to take care of that whole family unit, because
I've told not everything's going to work. Not just you. I mean, all of the commanders have done this in my time when I was there as a civilian. But I watched you guys take care of people who got their legs blown off and do the right thing by them, keep them in the unit because they were still service-oriented. I watched it with you and Barb and the way we took care of her and her family. His name is escaping me, but I remember Marcus, whose wife ended up with cancer, and the way that we took care of him and his family. I used to tell everybody, if you're not in this unit, you're making a mistake, because I got to watch it as the outsider and see how you guys took care of everybody. And again, it wasn't just you. It was Adam Suk. It was Jay Powers. I got to watch commander after commander operate that way.
Yeah.
So well, I tell everybody the best leadership I've ever seen.
It becomes part of the culture, right? And it works both ways though, right? When you're willing to invest in your people in that manner, it's amazing what they're willing to do. I mean, I can remember as a fifth group commander, we had a soldier that was blown up. He was a military working dog handler, and his service animal was killed in the explosion, which saved that soldier's life, right? But his blast injuries, it saved his vital organs, but he had lower limb extremity damage, and he had micro shards of steel in his eyes. And I went to check on him and make sure he was doing okay. And he tolerated me talking to him because when I saw him, he was over in a physical therapy office and he's like, "Hey, sir, thanks for checking on me and everything. But my team deploys in 7 months. And my doctors told me if I do everything I'm supposed to, I can be deployable again in 6 months. And you're in my way right now, right? Because I want to deploy with my guys and I want to be there with my teammates." So what a strong sense of culture and belonging, right? Like when you have people like that, why would you not try to take care of their family and invest in them, right? Because they're doing just these awesome things on behalf of the organization, right?
Yeah, it was so funny because he was coming down to the combatives room and, you know, Ray and I were like, "Hey, like, let's take this a little slow because we have a duty to protect them as well."
Sure, absolutely.
He's like, "I'm here, deal with it."
Let's go.
Yeah. He's a great guy, man. Great guy.
Yeah.
We just got to see that over and over and over. And, you know, it's so interesting because I can tell you the impact that you guys made on me as a civilian. When I evaluated where I was going next after COVID, I was like, I don't think I can go anywhere else because you guys ruined me, you know, because that culture was just so amazing. And I see that actually a lot with the fifth group guys, that they get lost in transition. How was that for you as you transitioned out?
Yeah, it can be challenging, right? To recognize you're part of this incredibly tight-knit organization. It's difficult to explain it to people, right? And knowing that only 7% of Americans have served in our military, that doesn't make us better than anybody else. It just means that was our path and our journey, right? But 93% of Americans don't really have a good reference point. Yeah. So it's what they get in the news, it's what they get in the media. Right. They get bombarded with 22 veteran suicides a day, PTSD, TBI, which are all real things. And they do impact a part of our population, but it's generally a small part. Right. And we need to take care of them. We owe that to them to take care of them. But the rest of the folks, right, are generally, you know, productive serving Americans. And even that population can be productive as well. Right. So when you're part of something that tight, finding that on the outside, right, in the civilian sector and in a different job can be very, very difficult, right? So when I talk to our guys, I always, you know, hey, guess what? Like that sense of connectedness, maybe it doesn't happen in your job, right? Maybe it's you become a combatives instructor. Maybe you're a little league coach. Maybe you're a Sunday school teacher, you know, but you have to find something in your life that allows you to continue to serve others, right? I think it's paramount for that veteran population. They were very used to doing it, right? So the program I run at Vanderbilt University right now, the Bass Military Scholars Program, it's a program for veterans, right, that are transitioning, they're working on advanced degrees, but they have to, right? So we give them some money, we give them a supportive network, we help them. What they have to do is share their military experience back with Vanderbilt community, right? Our undergrads, our faculty, our staff out into the community. What they have to give back is probably the greatest reward that we give to them. Right. Because it allows them to help and impact others right there. They find that unbelievably rewarding. Right. Because when we wore the uniform of our nation every day, you knew how you were doing that. Right. You were serving our nation. You were caring for your soldiers, your teammates, and you were helping care for their families right there. Right. So having that drive to be able to help others, we need, I think that's very important in the veteran transition space, is to make sure they identify how they're going to do that in the future.
Yeah. So, you know, yesterday I had Eric Horton on, who you know well.
Yeah.
One of the things we were talking about, and this is not about you because I've seen you do this stuff, but one of the things we were talking about was there is not a culture currently, and some of this is because we have competing agendas. We still have to be able to fight two front wars, et cetera. But why is it that you think that there's not as much preparation towards transition? And I'll frame it this way. Everything we do in the Army is backwards planned. Time on target, commander's intent, right? And then we backwards plan, except for our actual transition. I don't care if you're serving 2 years or 20 years or 30 years like you did, or almost 30, there's no real discussion of what does General Scott Brower do next? And from day one, right? Why do you think that is?
I think there's multiple answers to that, right? I think there's multiple reasons for it. First and foremost, I'll be, you know, perfectly honest, as a commander in the military, I was not concerned about who was transitioning out. Not that I didn't care about and love them, but at that time, right, we were deep into a war and my focus was preparing our soldiers for that next deployment, right? And that's where all my attention was. I admit, right, as fifth group commanders at other organizations, right, I failed to assist our soldiers transitioning out. It wasn't intentional.
I don't know because I saw you daily in the combatives room and heard you asking questions. What comes next? How are you taking care of your family?
Okay. All right. So maybe we talked about it. Maybe I have a concussion from being in the combatives room too much. But my point is, right, it wasn't the focus of my attention.
Sure.
Right? So as a leader, right, because you had so many things going on, you have requirements and you're trying to meet those requirements. Now, you know, if the soldier is going to transition in a year and we're supposed to have them in transition programs, but I have requirements that exceed my available manpower, I may pull him back and like, hey, John, I need you to do this right now to take care of this requirement, right? And so that happens that's the reality of things. I think some individuals, right, especially when we were in conflict and they're in a unit where, hey, their soldiers are going to deploy. Well, now I'm getting out. But my teammates are going, well, I'm going to make sure I do everything I can to help them before they go out. And now I ignore myself, right? Or I don't know what the heck it is I want to do when I get out on the outside. So I ignore it, right? I just put my head in the sand a little bit. Or I think it's going to be easy, right? And so I've seen all of those. I'm going to be a defense contractor, or I'm going to be a school teacher. Whatever it is that I want to do, right? I'll take care of that in a little bit, right? It's a little bit more complicated than that, right? And so, you know, we have to put time and attention on it. And unfortunately, it's one of those things, right? I didn't do it right. I didn't prepare in the manner I should have. If I look back now, if we could do it again, I would do it differently. And as I talk to people though, right? And I'll talk to those folks that are still inside those organizations and be like, hey, John, you know, have you given any thought? Like, I'll get to it, right? Like there's lack of realization. But now at least we're implementing programs to assist with that, to try, right? We're engaging in the conversation now, which is better than what we were doing before, right? So it can, you know, we can do it, but there are going to be some hurdles, right? And some changes.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to be able to fight a two-front war. We have to be able to conduct the mission. And at least in the special forces community, we really, you know, again, as an outsider's perspective, we don't really have the bodies to be able to afford a really good transition because we're such a small, tight unit, right? To a degree.
No, you're small, right? And like, you know the deal. I don't care where it is, right? It could be working at Walmart or Burger King. If you're really good at your job, guess what happens, right? You're rewarded with more work and more responsibility, right? So let's give you some more to do. So of course, he's doing a great job. Hey, maybe they can do this too, right? And the people in the community, right? Somewhat driven. And so like, I can take it on, right? I can do that. I can do a little bit more. Yeah. Well, there is a point, right, where we kind of have to step in and say, hey, you've done enough, and now I'm directing you to do this. And that's where I think the transition programs are a step in the right direction, right, to try to help take care of them and help them focus on that, right?
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
It was so interesting to me, just again, as an outsider, because I look at my time at Fifth Group as working as basically like with NFL teams, right? So if you think about it, in high school, like 1% of those guys make it to college ball, 1% of those guys make it to NFL ball. It's very similar to what we had at Fifth Group. What percentage of people in the Army actually make it to an SF? It's like less than one tenth of a percent. So very high echelon caliber of people. And that, and then they stay there for, like you said, you know, you're there pretty much for the rest of your career. So you're talking at least 10 to 20 years. And then when they got out, I would listen to the guys, just being the guy on the mat with them, talking about, I don't know what's next.
Yeah.
Like their whole identity. We both know somebody really who's a great person that really struggled with that process. And so they went on killing bad guys well into their late 50s because they didn't know who else they were. You know, so it was always interesting to me listening to that journey of their transition. I remember you, because you talk about it in our cohort all the time. You know, the statistics is you're going to switch jobs 3 to 5 times over the first couple of years. And you're like, by God, that's not going to be me. Tell me a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. So, you know, they, at the general officer transition course, they tell you, you know, kind of find that next kind of calling in life. It'll, the average is 3 to 5 years and 2 to 3 jobs. And I'm like, nah, I'm smarter than that. I'm going to get it. I got to figure it out. Right. And I've been out for 5 years now and I'm on my third job. Right. And so I'm now the poster child for that. Right. And whose fault is that? Right. And not that somebody's to blame for it. Right. But why did that happen is maybe a better way to phrase it. And it was me. Right. Like I didn't sit down and go, what is it you want to do next? Right. And a lot of people will ask you, what do you want to do next? Right. I've heard a question asked that I think is much more important, and is, what are you passionate about?
Yes. Right? What,
and I think that's such a significant, you know, it's a very important distinction and difference right there. Right. What really excites you, and what kind of motivates you, right? Because it gets right back to that purpose of helping others and having something that you're excited about, right? When we can find that, what does everyone say, right? If you love what you're doing, you'll never go to work, you know, for a day in your life, right? You just get to do what you love doing right there. And so, you know, what is that thing? And for years, for many of us, it was being a soldier, but now that's over and we're going to do something else, right? So what are you passionate about? What are you excited about, right? And if that's making as much money as possible so I can put food on the table for my family, hey, great. There's nothing wrong with that, right? But if it's, hey, you know what? I want to be a grade school teacher because I just love working with young kids and I want to see them grow and develop, and I'm not going to make as much money doing that, hey, go and be a school teacher, right? Do that, right? But invest the time to figure out what gets you excited, right? So I worked at Austin Peay State University for a period of time. The pandemic hits. I'm asked to go and run the state of Tennessee government's COVID response, working with the governor and his team. And then now I'm at Vanderbilt University running a scholarship program, right? So three distinct different jobs, two within the, you know, education arena. But what I learned through that is I love helping veterans find their next path. And I also love and enjoy and find reward in helping build the connections between that civilian workforce community, the 93% of Americans that haven't served, to help them understand what the heck it is that is sitting there available to them, right? So I've kind of found that calling at this point.
Well, I would say that you probably just weren't really watching, because you did that the entire time I've known you. I watched you do it at Fifth Group. You were bringing in people from the outside. You've always been, to me, at least as an outsider, the spokesman to bring communities together. I watched you do it for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I appreciate that.
And you always, I told somebody this, they asked me, and you're the reason. So makes me a little emotional, but somebody asked me, why is Fifth Group so important to you? You haven't been there for 4 years. And I go, it's the best organization I've ever been a part of. And they go, well, what's one story? I said, my grandfather died. I took off from work, and General Scott Brower sent flowers to my grandfather's funeral. That's who you are. I've watched that for 20 years. Not just there. You know, I remember the ass chewing you gave me because I was at work after having throat surgery. And you're like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm the contractor. I'm the only guy. And you're like, get your ass home. You know, so I've watched you be that guy, you know, for years. So I love that you're doing that now, because to me, looking from the outside, that's just who you've always been.
I appreciate it. Right. But you learn from others, right? When my father passed away and I went to, you know, his service, there's a whole bunch of flowers from inside the organization. Right. And the units and the leaders. Right. So like, I'd like to think some of the things I do are because I learned from being surrounded by really, really quality people. and willing to learn from them, right? Like learning is a two-way street. And, you know, I do leadership development for the Vanderbilt football program, our women's lacrosse team, and in a bunch of other areas, right? And when I'm dealing with college age kids that are really smart and everything, but they're very young, right? In comparison, I got a lot more life experience. I've made a lot more leadership mistakes than they have ever thought about making. But every day I go into a classroom with them, I walk out having learned something, right, from them, right? So I think if you take that mindset, I think there's a lot of opportunities. And I think that applies to the transition thing too, right? Like there's nobody, right? We, as a veteran, nobody owes me a thing. I was privileged and honored to serve, right? And that was my choice. And I was able to do that. And that's reward enough. There's nobody that owes me a blessed thing for doing that, right? So if I'm going to be part of an organization, it should be because I can help make it better, right? And so we just have to figure out how to make that adjustment, that change, join that new team right there. And so we still have to be willing to learn and listen and kind of grow, right? It's not over.
So you mentioned earlier that in hindsight, you made several mistakes in your transition. So let me paint the picture. You're getting to year 18 of your military service. You've made the decision that 20 is it, right? If you could go back and redo all of that process, what would you tell the guy that's at 18 years, 19, 20 years? What would you tell him to do differently?
Right. There's life after the military. Right. And so I don't care if you've been in for 3 years or 30 years. There's still there's still life right in the workforce. Right. So there's something else. You're not going golfing the entire time. Right. You may do it more, but you're not going to do it all the time. So what is it you want to do? Right. And so our focus is always like we talked before. Right. Hey, my teammates are deploying. I feel guilty. Right. I want to make sure they're comfortable. I don't know what I want to do yet. And we ignore it. Right. So the whole point, though, is right. Single, married, doesn't matter. Right. But like whether you're taking care of yourself, you're taking care of a family. Hey, make sure that you're doing the work and you're taking the time to think through how you're going to take care of yourself and them kind of into the future right there. Right. So I wish I had spent a little bit more time being deliberate about what is it I want to do. Right. Because there was plenty of people that wanted to help me, but I didn't allow them to because I couldn't tell them what I wanted to do. So how do they help me if I don't, what do you want to do, Scott? I don't know. Well, then I can't really help you. Right. If I want to go into sales, if I want to go into education, you want to go into entertainment. Okay, great. Now we've narrowed it down. And as I talk to people, the more specific we can be, right, the easier it is to receive assistance and help. And I do believe there are some, you know, wonderful transition programs out there, right, that do just this, right? They get us to sit down and to think through not the problem, the opportunity, right? This isn't a problem. I don't know what I'm going to do next. No. I don't know what the next opportunity is, right? So let's think about what the next opportunity is right there. And I think that's one of the challenges for veterans where, right, there's a reputation that exists for veterans, you know, that we job hop when we get out, right? So there's sometimes a hesitancy from a company to hire a veteran because I don't want to be the first one because 6 months later, they're going to be gone, right?
Right.
Well, that happens because we haven't done our homework to go, you know what? Sales is interesting, but I'm not a good salesman, right? Or I am a good communicator, and maybe I can be a teacher. Like, so we need to do our homework. We need to assess what's out there, right? So that we can try to get lined up first, right? So when you ask, what would I have done differently? I would have invested the time to think through it, right? And don't do that on your own. Networking is the most critical thing out there, right? Resumes, I think, are largely a thing of the past, right? It's, you know, I you want to get to the point where a resume is, oh, hey, please drop your resume off at HR, but we've already had the discussions, right? So veterans have to be able to stand up in front of folks and explain to them what they've done in their military career and what they're interested in doing and how they can bring value to their organization. Yeah. The veteran population has a ton of things to offer, right? That I don't care what anybody says, right? It's got probably the best leadership program in the world. Very structured and it is very, it morphs over time. It's adjusted, but how many years I went to school for years in the military to become a better leader. Yep. Right. And I see how that can be impactful for almost every organization I've been exposed to since I've been out.
Yeah. So you bring up the networking and, you know, we talked about this in the pre-call and I think this is super important. you know, you graduated from West Point, so super smart guy. But one of the things that I think that West Point does better than I've seen just about anybody else in the military, maybe fifth group, like the SF community does it equally, but you really hear about it from West Point, is you guys establish a referral network, a network identity, that there's almost this after service West Point alumni. Like, I can get anywhere through my West Point alumni. Talk to me about that. And is that something that's intentional, or is that something that just kind of like organically happened? Like, tell me about that.
Yeah, I think it's very intentional, right? And so I'll use the analogy of the American Legion or the VFW, right? Like, so West Point has an association of graduates, and as you go around the country, there'll be, you know, the West Point Association of Graduates, Middle Tennessee, or North Jersey, or wherever it is, right? Like, you can find that group that meets periodically, right? And so, hey, the commonality is you all went to the same school, and then you served in the same company, right? It happened to be the United States Army for a period of time, whether it was 3 years or 30, but there's a commonality right there, right? So the one thing, you know, that I've definitely learned, I don't believe in absolutes, you know, always and never, but this is as close to always as you get. Veterans will always help veterans, right? Like, they're not going to say no. They're just not going to, hey, I may not be able to help you right now, John. I can't take the call, but can I get with you tomorrow, right? I find that to be as close to an absolute as I can right now. And I think when, you know, the smaller you go, right, you have some commonality, you went to the same school, it's a pretty small school. You went through, you know, the pain of being at West Point and the winters on the Hudson and all that stuff. So there's that bond, right? So that connection. So that turns into a network, right? So, hey, I can connect into that network here in Middle Tennessee. Now maybe they can start opening some doors for you, right? But, right, use the American Legion, use the VFW, use the Special Forces Association, right? You can get connected to it. And I think that's very, very important. We know statistically veterans that are in distress or problems more often than not are not connected to some kind of veteran organization, right? They kind of go on their own. And, hey, you want to get away from the Army, the Navy, Air Force? Hey, that's fine. Do your thing, right? But build some type of connection, right? Either with your friends, you know, that you enjoyed in the service, or through a veteran service organization, or just know where they are in case you do need it, right? Stay connected for all kinds of reasons, right? So, but that networking for the purposes of employment, and finding out, you know, just about your community and how you can. So it's not, I don't care, I got a job. Well, what volunteer opportunities are there out here in the community, right? When Clarksville just got hit, Clarksville, Tennessee got hit with these horrible tornadoes, right? And we lose a couple hundred homes, 700-800 homes damaged. The outpouring of support in the community was incredible, right? But when you look at the military members, right? I mean, our own county mayor was on, I think, Good Morning America, and like told him, he's like, look, we're a military community. Please help some of these other outlying communities. We got all the help we need because we got all these military members and the veterans here, and they're just crushing this thing, right? We're going to be okay, right? Be connected, right? Being connected is so critically important for a lot of reasons. Employment, just, you know, having a bond, right? Having that brotherhood, that sisterhood. You want to be part of something like that.
Well, and I think the outside of the networking for professional purposes, right? I personally, and I don't know if there's data to support this, I think that the 22 a day is really the people that aren't connected and don't find a way to stay connected. And I think it's so important that we find our tribe outside of the military to help us deal with those struggles.
Yeah. It's statistically proven, right, through the VA. I sit on the boards of two mental health nonprofits that are focused on the veteran population right now. And we do know 2 out of 3 veteran suicides, there's no connection for that individual to any veteran type organization, whether it's the American Legion, Team Red, White, and Blue, SF Association. It doesn't matter, right? They've kind of isolated, right, themselves. And that's where we get into just check on each other, right? And I don't care where you work or if you've been in the military or not, right? But checking on your friends, just, you know, hey, sometimes we all have a bad day. And how helpful is it sometimes? You know the deal, like, hey, John, I was just thinking about you, so I gave you a call. No reason. I just had that from one of my West Point classmates, right? Dear friend of mine. He knew that we had cold weather, and Tennessee doesn't deal well with that, right? He's from upstate New York. He's like, hey, so you guys are having cold weather. You got just wanted to call and make sure you're doing okay. Doing all right. Like, that's it, right? Like, your fun meter just goes up a couple points, right? When you, hey, that was my buddy. He called on me, checked on me, right? Yeah. Like, somebody out there cares about me, right? It's okay to do that for each other every once in a while.
I tell every class now, hey, look, I'm spending the next 12 weeks with you. I'm here for you. You have my cell phone. Don't any of you ever isolate to the point that you do this, because I'll track you down and find you afterwards. Because I want them to know that I'm there, period. Yeah. And again, at Fifth Group, I don't know what our statistics were, but I'd like to think it was less, because I watched, you know, one of the greatest leaders I've ever seen is Andy Marshall, and the way that he handled his teams in the early part of the 9/11 era, and the way that they did their team parties and intertwined their families. You know, I got to watch all that as an outsider, and I could go, this is what true community and leadership looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you make me think about that, because when, you know, you talk about the family, right? And I just, the talk I gave this morning, I talk about it all the time, right? Our family serves, right? Yeah. My wife didn't get paid by the Army, but, you know, she had to go into homes of casualties, and she was always, you know, pulling the spouses together and doing things, right, to form community, as whether we deployed on a training exercise or, you know, whatever we were doing, or in combat, right? Same thing for our children, right? You know, our children, hey, dad's gone again, right? He's not at the ball game. He's not at the dance recital. He's not at my school event. And then they see what's going on in the news, right? So it impacts all of them. The same thing applies for transition, right? I'm coming out of military service, but my wife, right, it's a transition for her as well, right? So that family unit transitions, right? And it's worth recognizing that, right? That, you know, hey, she used to get a break from me every couple of months because I would be deployed, right? Now I'm here all the time, right? So did her expectations change? Like, now maybe after 30 years, Scott's going to start helping around the house, or, right? Like, that, it's worth sitting down again and thinking through it, right? And that's not marriage counseling, right? But it's just, hey, let's communicate and make sure we're clear on, you know, hey, our lives are changing right here.
And I don't think enough people understand that portion of it, or that the transition programs that exist all exist for your spouse as well, right? So, like, when you look at the COOL program, your spouse can take advantage of that. When you look at SkillBridge, your spouse, like Hiring Our Heroes, great organization, actually pays your spouse, I think it's like, I don't remember, I think it's 15 or 18 bucks an hour to come do the SkillBridge to learn a new career, so that when you two transition, that finances aren't necessarily the biggest concern, right? So yeah. There's some, like, again, I think we're a little bit slow to the dance on this one, but I think we are doing a really good job at supporting the spouse as much as we're supporting the soldier transitioning.
Yeah, I think so. And again, I think it just goes to communication, right? And engaging the business community, talking to them and all, because, you know, we all just, you know, went through the pandemic, right? The COVID pandemic. And, you know, if there's something good that came out of that nightmare, it was, we figured out how to work remotely pretty well, right? And so now, you know, I was in the military for 29 years. We lived in 18 houses. We PCS, I don't know how many times, right? So my wife, if she chose to work, she could have jobs, no problem, right? Everywhere we went, she could have jobs, but it was very difficult for her to have a career, right? And connected into the same organization. Well, guess what just changed, right? Now with the ability to work remotely, like, hey, so we moved from Fort Campbell to Fort Liberty in North Carolina. Hey, no problem. Like, she doesn't even have to break employment, right? Just take a couple of days off to move and get the house set up again. And here we go. Yeah. So when we engage with companies and we talk about this hidden talent of our military spouses that's available, think about, right, the satisfaction they could get. Think about the financial relief that family can get. Think about the reduction in stress that creates when finances aren't a problem that we're arguing about all the time, right? And now, wow, we've just changed things because we recognize, you know, the advantage of engaging this incredibly talented military spouse population as well, right? So many opportunities out there that we have to talk
there's
about.
So many fields that now are fully remote, and there's still, like, because I watch this now because of the SkillBridge program, but, you know, there's still kind of like a chicken thing happening between employers and employees. Employees are going, I've tasted remote. I'm not coming back to the office. And employers are going, I didn't like losing control. You're coming back to the office, you know. But there's certain industries, sales, accounting. I've seen a lot of accounting departments that have gone fully remote, because do you really have to sit in the office to run numbers on Excel or QuickBooks or whatever they do.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that has been a great, if you're in the right career, that's been a great benefit for, I think, for the military community, because it's not like you came out of the Army being a millionaire. So right. We traditionally speaking, even with the officers, don't really make the money that you would if you would have took that and become a CEO, but you did the role of a CEO.
Yeah. It's interesting. It definitely is a challenging dynamic, especially that remote piece, right? Like, I mean, hey, for some professions, it works, for others, maybe not. And for some people, it can work and for others not, right? Yeah. Some people, I want to see them. I need to, right? Because they don't have the maturity or the knowledge maybe yet, right? To be able to handle it remotely, where you got to have more interactions. And some people may not like it, right? Like, so during the pandemic, when I was working for the state, we were in one of the government office buildings, and we were like some of the only people. Normally there was like 2,800 people in a building, and maybe there was 200 there, right? So we got a floor to ourselves, and I would walk by cubicles that had, the calendar from March of 2020. Now it's April of 2021. And I'm like, I want some of that. I want to be able to work from home in my pajamas for, a year. And then when I started at Vanderbilt, we were still remote and I was home for about a week. And I'm like, okay, I've had it with this. Like, this is not my gig. I don't want any part of this, right? Because I thrive on a little bit of human interaction and connection. Sure. Where, I've worked with plenty of people that are like, you know what, put me in the room on my own and I'm not bothered by other people. Like, I'm good. I will crank out work for you. Right. So I think it's finding that right environment. Because the remote's not for everybody.
Not for everybody. That's for sure.
Yeah.
In our skill bridge, we're talking through. So the first thing I do is I set them up to say, hey, remote is becoming the unicorn. So if you can land it, that's great. But you shouldn't ride on that expectation. Because
absolutely not.
Yeah. That the culture has shifted back more to in office or not remote or maybe hybrid. Yeah. Right. So. Yeah. But then there's the personality side. Like, maybe you are the person that can be completely isolated and that fills your box of joy. You're like, but I'm like you. I mean, I get it through this. I mean, because I'm connected in so many different areas, but I would hate to be the lone wolf all by myself. Like, no. That's not me.
Yeah, I'm with you. Absolutely.
Just as we kind of wrap up here, you're involved in so many things, and I've watched you, like I said, over the years. You know, you're in nonprofits, you're in leadership roles. How would somebody reach out to you? Is there anything that you'd like to talk about that they could help support in this endeavor to transition, and what all that you're doing there?
How much time do we have, John, to talk about that?
Take as much as you need.
Nah, I'm just joking. So I do support multiple nonprofits. I support and work with several mental health nonprofits that I talked about that are focused on the veteran population, the Cohen Veterans Network here in Clarksville, and then Centerstone Military Services, which is a national organization. And then I do love supporting our local communities here, right? So I still live in Clarksville. Jen and I are two kids from New Jersey, but we're stationed at Fort Campbell for 13 years. It's where we raised our children. I deployed from Fort Campbell into combat 6 times from here, left my family here every time. This community gave so much to my family that I want to be able to give back, and doing it locally, right, feels special to me. So, the one that's, real special to me is the Fort Campbell Historical Foundation. We're in the process of getting approval to build a new museum to honor the service and sacrifice of all the combat units on Fort Campbell, the 101st Airborne Division, 5th Special Forces Group, and the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. It's going to be, once it's constructed, it'll be the largest military museum between Chicago and New Orleans. In the middle of our country, it's going to be something significant for local economic impact here in Clarksville. We plan on having education programs as part of this effort right there. We've made that commitment to the state of Tennessee and to the state of Kentucky that'll support K-12 education programs in civics, leadership, and history. It'll support college level education through research and other efforts right there in the history arena. We have a national level speaker series that'll be part of it, where we partner with different universities to bring in national level speakers. We'll have General Jack Keane come in, former Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, still very heavily involved in national defense. He'll be in next month to speak. So that one's a special one to me, right? Because here we are again with only 7% of us having served in the military. It's an opportunity to share what that service means, what it looks like, right? We're all about educating and inspiring, right, that next generation. And so it's going to be a wonderful facility that our school kids can go to, that adults can go to help
out with what it looks like.
I'm sorry.
Years, right? You've been working on that project for like 4 years.
I've been working on it since I got out. The project's been in place for a long time. There's been some significant delays, right? But we actually, the formal request for us to donate this museum to the United States Army, that approval process is working towards the Secretary of the Army right now. We expect to break ground on it in this year, right? So we're expecting by May that we're actually going to have shovels, you know, moving dirt and starting to put steel up. And it's going to be a phenomenal facility where there's a 7,000 square foot museum on Fort Campbell right now. This will have over 41,000 square feet of display space to tell those stories. And it's going to be a great meeting spot, right? So when we talk about transition, what better to have a job fair at this museum where you can talk to service members and see what the heck they actually did, right? And help inspire and share.
Fort Campbell has such a storied tradition. I mean,
it's incredible. Yeah.
Like, just some of the stuff, you know, Band of Brothers, all that stuff, all took place here. And so that would be awesome. What do you think is going to be the completion date for that? We break ground. So
it's about a 13-month build and then 3 months to move into it, right? So if we break ground in May or so, so we're in 24, so it'll summer, fall of 2025, it'll be open for folks to get in there. We have a couple more phases, right, where we're going to get classrooms and all in there. So there's a little bit more work to do after that, but hopefully it'll be open to the public by the fall of 2025.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome. Because I've known you, I've heard about you in the museum for 4 years now.
Yeah.
You know, so I was wondering because it hadn't come up yet, and I'm like, he hasn't mentioned the museum.
No, it's coming. We have a great team. It's in place. It's all about these units and telling the stories of American sons and daughters. Right. It's not about the equipment, right? That's the vehicle, but this is all about American soldiers, right? That's what the museum's about. And what better way to help educate people about, hey, this is what they can do than by telling those stories, right? About these wonderful, wonderful, dedicated, you know, service members and their families, right? So it's going to be a phenomenal facility.
So if somebody wants to give to the project or the museum, where do they go to do that?
Yeah, just you can Google the Fort Campbell Historical Foundation. There's mechanisms to deal with that right there. If you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, you know, please do. And we'll get you connected to the right folks, because there's definitely room to take more donations, because we have a pretty extensive plan in place, and it's always going to grow, right? Because guess what? There's always going to be more history, right? You know, we've told the story through Desert Storm. Great. Well, now we got Iraqi freedom. Well, now we have Operation Enduring Freedom. And now, you know, the fight and the amazing things that Fifth Special Forces Group has done inside of Syria that no Americans know about, right? It's just amazing to see. So we want to tell those stories, right, of these great Americans and what they're doing on behalf of our nation.
Yeah, great. All right. Thank you so much for your time today. I loved it. I love just reconnecting with you anytime I can anyway. And if you guys want to reach out to him, I'll put his LinkedIn bio inside the show notes. And feel free to connect with him, because I watch him serve veterans all the time. Thanks, man.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Sales Platoon for more updates and veteran success stories. Join us next time as we continue to decode the art of selling through the unique perspectives of those who've served.